Hello and welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. I'm Diana Isaacs and joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And we have another exciting episode today where we're going to talk all things insulin pumps and automated insulin delivery. And so the first thing we just wanted to give a quick update, a lot of people are very excited that Omnipod 5 will now be integrated with iPhone so that people will be able to control their pod from their iPhone. And just for those that weren't aware, this has been compatible with different Android phones since the beginning, but not everyone has an Android phone, right? There's lots of iPhone users. So I think this is a welcome update that people have been waiting and asking, when is this going to come? When is this going to come? So I think people are definitely very excited about it. Natalie, what do you think?
I think I got 10 calls the first day it was announced from people saying, how do I upgrade? How do I do this? I am excited. I think that, you know, we want to reduce the burden of managing diabetes in every single way we can. And one of those ways is having to carry that extra controller. So people will not have to do that anymore. They'll be able to bolus directly from their iPhone like they can from some Androids at this time. And we have to be patient. They are announcing pretty much right after, at some point, right after the first of the year, we should expect this as a public release. So here we go. I'm happy to do this. One of the clinical concerns will be, are we restarting the algorithm? And I think that answer is going to be yes. So what that means to the clinician and the patient is this should be a really good time to make sure that the background basals that are set and the and your settings are appropriate so that when you do switch, you'll have the best outcome available. Diana, do you want to talk a little bit more about that? Since we're switching controllers from the controller that's shipped to a phone, what is that going to look like in your patient population?
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point. So with a new controller, or in this case, the phone, and starting this app, you can go into automation right away. But the first pod is generally more conservative. The adaptive basal rate can't increase as much as it can with future use of the system. And in a sense, it's basically has to calculate the total daily insulin dose again. It's not going to have that memory from the previous pod since you're switching controllers. So I think education will be really important, especially that first pod is working off of those basal rates that are set and using that to determine total daily insulin dose. And so to your point, this is a good opportunity to recheck those basals, make sure they look similar to what the person has been receiving in automation, and set the new app correctly so that it hopefully the transition is as smooth as possible. But I would just educate people, it's possible they may notice their numbers are a little higher that first pod, but it should quickly kind of level out. Generally, the last 4 to 5 pods are what's used in the algorithm. So after like 2 weeks, it should be running how they're used to.
I think that's a great point. We just have to make sure the education is in place so that that people with diabetes expect, it's just going to protect you. Remember what this system is about. It's protecting from the lows first, which is what we want. Lows are short-term, much more dangerous than highs. So the first thing it's going to do is protect from lows. So optimizing those settings, re-looking at them, is your IOB set appropriately? Is the insulin to carb ratio truly working the way you want it to? I think this is going to be a great place to stop and say, let's make sure everyone's on the same page as we transition, like we do with all changes in pump therapy. We're going to, as much as possible, consider it a visit to say, okay, your settings are exactly where we want them. Let's go. Don't forget about bolusing for food. Don't forget about pre-bolusing, and really make this system give us what we know it can if we have engagement.
Definitely. So that's exciting. So, and the next thing that we want to talk about is actually something that was shared at EASD and then was simultaneously published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And that's what's called the ADAPT study. And so this was actually a hybrid closed loop system used in pregnancy. And so this is very exciting because we prior to this really didn't have data and information. And this specific system is actually approved for use in pregnancy in the UK. It is unfortunately not available in the US at this time, but I think we can learn a lot from this trial. And so what they did was they actually randomized 124 pregnant individuals that had type 1 diabetes. They ranged from 18 to 45, and they either were switched to this CAM APS system, or they continued their standard therapy, which could have been an insulin pen injections or their other insulin pump. And in order to be enrolled, they had to have an A1C of at least 6.5%. They ended up having a mean baseline A1C of 7.7%, and the mean age was 31 years. So what did they look at? So they looked at the time in range, and the time in range of pregnancy is different than it is outside of pregnancy, right? So outside of pregnancy, 70 to 180, and pregnancy, 63 to 140, and we're aiming for at least 70% in range, ideally, if we can achieve that. So the CAM APS group ended up spending 68% time in range compared to 56% in the standard care group. And the time in range consistently improved. It was higher throughout really the whole pregnancy each week. And also there were differences, for example, in the time below range, 2.3% with the CAM APS versus 2% with the regular. So there was actually a little bit more time below range, but a lot less time above range, only 29% above range compared to 41% in the usual care. So that's kind of top line results. There's a lot more things to say about it, but Natalie, initial reactions from these results.
We need this. We need this system where we are now. In our practice today, we are using other off-label AID systems in pregnancy right now. The idea that in the UK they have a system that is actually approved for use is this is wonderful news. And I think that long term, you know, they brought in everybody, every person that went on the system, every person that was on injections. And what this tells us is we can use AID with people that have diabetes and also pregnant and really improve their outcomes. That's a big percentage increase of time in range. And we know that as glucoses rise, that glucose is passed on and that becomes, it creates complications in the pregnancy, both for the fetus as well as for the person with diabetes.
Yeah. And other thing I should probably mention, too, is there were improvements in the maternal and fetal outcomes, which are really, that's what's most important. The time in range and A1C, those are really surrogates for those other outcomes. But the study wasn't powered to really detect those differences. But there were certainly improvements and trends in those areas, which is important. It's just difficult to power a study in pregnant people to reach those outcomes, but it looks very promising in terms of also leading to those improved outcomes. I think like also some interesting things about this pump are just the customization that you can do. And so to your point, Natalie, it's like we work with our existing pumps in the US, but they're not designed. I mean, with the lowest target of 100, that's the closest we can really get to these pregnancy targets. But really overnight, we're aiming for a fasting of less than 95. And so if you have a target of even 100, you're still not at 95, right? So in this system, they actually aimed for, you can go as low as 80 for that target. And it's interesting, they actually in the first trimester up to the first 16 weeks, they used less than 100 just because of the higher risk of hypoglycemia in the first trimester. And then they took it down to between 80 and 90. So that's really, very interesting. And then just one other kind of interesting thing is I was actually watching a webinar related to the system since we don't have it in the US and just learning more about it. So for those that don't know, it's an insulin pump and it's actually controlled by a mobile app, the CAM APS app. The pump itself is the Dana insulin pump. And then it's working with CGM. In this case, it's working with the Dexcom G6. So I was trying to like learn more about the pieces and parts. But one tidbit that I thought was really smart that we could be applying to our patients using AID, probably in and outside of pregnancy, was this idea about pre-bolusing. And normally in pregnancy, it's very common that by the time you get to the third trimester, we're advising patients to pre-bolus like 40 minutes. Like, it's just like pre-bolus, pre-bolus. You got to get this insulin in you. But with these systems, actually, if you pre-bolus too much in advance, the background insulin is also going to be suspending and stopping, and you may actually end up getting less insulin, which could then cause more postprandial hyperglycemia. So they seem to think the sweet spot was 10 to 15 minutes, which I think makes a lot of sense. Of course, it might vary a little bit on the glycemic index and fat and protein content of foods, but I thought that was kind of a good clinical pearl.
And I also think that overall, what we're in the United States right now, because we don't have this system, sometimes we're using an AID and saying, well, this person started with an A1C. Remember, 50% of pregnancies are unplanned, approximately. So we're using an AID and that may not get us to that fasting goal. It may not get us to what we want, but ultimately it's still better than the MDI that they were on, or even a pump that doesn't talk to the CGM before. So sometimes we're saying, I'd rather have an A1C of 7 than start with an A1C of 9, and I can get things to come down pretty quickly and manage the best we can. Well, this may be an answer in between of saying, we can really target these lower numbers, and I'm excited about it. It'll be interesting to see. You know, it's extremely expensive to launch an insulin pump, an AID system in the United States. It'll be interesting to see what happens next. I do want to note that you can, you know, this, we've talked about Loop in the past. The Loop app has been approved, the Tidepool Loop, for use in the United States. They don't have a pump partner yet, so it can't speak to anything at this point. And Loop is going to be able to give us that app, once it can talk to a pump, some of these more specialized features, like saying, I'm going to eat in the next 20 minutes, and it actually sets a target of a little bit lower. So you can set the target to, I'm going to eat, I want to be 80 before I even put a carbohydrate near my body, and still pre-bolus for that so that you see less of a rise afterwards. This is where precision medicine, I'm excited. We have all kinds of options in the future for the people that present to us with pregnancy and diabetes.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I can't wait till the Tidepool like becomes commercially available, because I think that is definitely the closest thing to what we're seeing with this system. Just some other, I think, interesting things to point out about this trial is just that the standard care group had 55.6% time in range. And even though we aim for a target of 70%, I think that's really very real life, that it's super challenging with just typical insulin pumps or injections to reach that 70% in range without having a ton of hypoglycemia. So to me, that it seems their control was really spot on. But even with this pump, it's just interesting because they achieved 68% time in range. So not quite at the 70, but definitely better than we've seen with any other system or really anything else in pregnancy. And then I just also thought it was interesting, the mean glucose was around 125. I know I've heard from experts like Helen Murphy to try to aim for 110 to 120 as a mean, but that is definitely lower than we've seen with kind of other trials. And of course, it's very challenging in this population. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited to have this data and hopefully some of the things we can apply to our patients, even though we're not using, we don't have this technology, but maybe some of the tips and tricks related to its use, and we can apply for the systems that we are using. So with that, I know, Natalie, you're very excited about what we call time in tighter range, which is a little different, but sort of similar to this idea. Like in pregnancy, we have these tighter targets of 63 to 140. So for the general population, we've been using 70 to 180, but really there's a whole movement, more outside of the US, but a whole movement to say, why are we settling for 70 to 180? Like, can't we do tighter than that. And so a whole movement to really kind of have more quote unquote normalized glucose levels of 70 to 140. And so that's the time in tighter range. So can you tell us a little more about that or new data that has been shared related to this?
So one of the things that, you know, when we started with this time in range idea and 70 to 180, there was a group in the International Consensus on Time and Range back in 2019 created this amazing ability to look at fingerstick data from the DCCT, those 7-point fingersticks that were done, and say, okay, 70% time and range equals an approximate A1C of about 7%. And it really does. I mean, I consistently see that in practice every single day. If I can get someone to 70% time and range, lots and lots of the time, the A1C is very close to 7, 7.2, 7.5, 6.8, wherever we are with that variability in that number, right? But there was a study which found individuals living without diabetes. So people without diabetes spend 96% of their time between 70 and 140 milligrams per deciliter. So in a much tighter range, and only about 2-2.5% between 140 and 180. So maybe time in tighter range would reflect better or improved euglycemia. So remember, if someone is 160 all the time, their time in range is still 100%. But is that what we're looking for, and is that what we're trying to attain? No, it's not. So if we bring down the range, even just a little bit, maybe we can look at more euglycemia and an improved metric for diabetes management. So I think that's where it's coming from. I think the challenge is for lots of people, we think, oh my gosh, time in tighter range. I can't even get to 70% time in range right now. How am I ever going to do this? And it leads down this rabbit hole of failure. But we don't really know exactly how much time in tighter range we really need to improve glycemic outcomes in the end, right? And what is improving glycemic outcomes? Reduce the risk of complications. So I think there's a lot to be said about it. I can tell you that Medtronic released some results looking at the 780G and time in tighter range. And one of the things they found is their new 780G, which was very recently released in the U.S., found that that people who use 780, they spent almost 3 more hours a day in tight range compared to their baseline data. The baseline went from 37% to 49% time in tighter range. And that's impressive. That really is a big improvement in that narrowing of that fluctuation that we're all trying to address every day.
Yeah, definitely. And I also wanted to just share, too, that there was recently a publication that came out. It was by Moshe Philip and Satish Garg about trying to correlate time in tighter range with time in range. And what they found from their data was that likely 45% time in tighter range correlates very well with 70% time in range. So, I mean, these are all correlations. We know 70% time in range correlates pretty well with an A1C around 7%. So does that mean 45? We can make that hypothesis. We still have to prove it, but I think at least it starts to give some guidance of, well, what might be the goal for that time in tighter range. I mean, I would love to see 50% or more in that time in tighter range. Cause also I think the challenge is, like, in the real world, we aim for that 70% time in range, but then we have patients that are there. They're 70% in range, but their A1Cs are higher, or even their glucose management indicator, they're higher than 7%. And so I think we see that sometimes 70% it's not enough, because maybe they are spending a lot more time between 160 and 180. And so I do like this idea of the time in tighter range. I think that one of the other logistic challenges is just that it's taken people so long to, like, learn what the range is for time and range. And then if we change it, like, is that just going to make everyone's head spin? But I don't know that should be a reason not to pursue it. I know in other countries like Sweden and places, other places in Europe, they are very much like, this is the direction that we should be going. And perhaps if there was a way that we could report both of them and just educate people on the differences, that'd be pretty cool.
And also, I think that this brings up the challenge of, what does an AID system not offer yet? And that really is about mealtime insulin bolusing. And I know that you and I both have talked about this before, where the getting the insulin into the body before the carbohydrates are consumed is such a big part of AID. You know, if you rise for an hour or two after breakfast, after lunch, and after dinner, that's up to six hours a day where you're above target. So just really actively attempting to pre-bolus as often as you can to just get some insulin going. I think there's a couple of things that people with diabetes, I say every day, you can give more insulin as you eat, but get something in your body to get it started. Give it, you know, treat the glucose if it's high, absolutely. And then know that you're probably going to eat 15 or 20 grams right off the top. And then you can always give more, so that that glucose and that insulin don't hit above 180. They hit at 120 or even 140, so that we're avoiding those peaks. I think the AID systems are amazing to bring glucose down overnight. The challenge is still mealtimes. So this is going to be, as we talk about time and tighter range, there are two things I see. Number one, pre-bolusing and the education around that. But number two, that it doesn't have to be 70%, and that 50% might be the success. Well, we in America don't look at 50% as success, do we? We look at 100%, A plus, here we go, you got to get it all. And I don't want to create this group of people that are now depressed and feeling like they're failures because they can't get their time in tighter range down or up to 100% at a time. And I think we need to go back to our philosophy of the Adam Brown and the 42 factors that affect glucose. Is the infusion set bad? Are you ill? Is there something else going on? Are you menopausal? Are you, you know, menstruating today, tomorrow, in the next 5 days? Are you under a lot of stress at work? Are you dehydrated? All those things that can make glucose fluctuations go above that time and tighter range readily, that we need to also address as we work with people with diabetes.
Yeah, I think, yeah, those are great points. And just going back to the Medtronic data, I think it's interesting that, you know, in terms of the amounts that they were able to achieve there, like the 48.8, I guess, overall, but then when they had the optimal settings, which usually we say is like insulin action time, 2 hours with this system, the lowest glucose target of 100, that it was 57%. And that's the 70 to 140. So just kind of thinking pregnancy, right, where we've got the 63 to 140, those are pretty close. And granted, in the ADAPT study, they were able to achieve 68%. But I think to your point, Natalie, they were followed in pregnancy with weekly adjustments. Likely they were targeting a higher target. This is just real world data that included all different types of people. So I think it's definitely promising also, because this is for sure one of the systems we're kind of trying to use in pregnancy off label. And so I think it's encouraging to see what is becoming possible with AID. And, oh, I know, one other thing I wanted to say about the time and tighter range and kind of demoralizing people is that, like you mentioned, even in the people without diabetes, they still had on average 2% time over 140. So what that tells you is even someone with a fully functioning pancreas may not spend all their time between 70 and 140. So I don't think, hopefully, we can educate people that the goal is not perfection. You don't, like, that is not even, that's not the goal at all. So, I think that's just really interesting.
But I think there's so much more that we are going to be able to do as we have faster acting insulins, as we have more aggressive algorithms being developed every day. This is an exciting field, and I think we're going to see time in range and time in tighter range increase over time just by the engineering feats alone of the different companies.
Yeah, it's really awesome. It's so exciting. All right. Well, with that, I think that concludes this episode of, like, automated insulin delivery, insulin pumps, and time and tighter range. So thank you for tuning in to Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. And we'll see you all next time.